This message is brought to you by DoNotAge.org, the longevity research organisation that's on a mission to extend health span for as many people as possible via products that actually work. Start your journey today at DoNotAge.org and use code LLAMA for a 10% discount. That's LLAMA.
My phone is switched onto silent mode and I leave it in a different room. I leave it in a different room and I don't pick it up. And I resent that wasting of time that just gets sucked into it. I really do.
Hello again. Welcome to the Live Long and Master Aging podcast. This is the latest in our series where Peter Allison and I try to figure out what it takes to enjoy another 50 years or thereabouts. It is 50 years since we first went to school together. 50 years this month. In fact, Peter spent much of his life working as a professor of geology in the UK, while I pursued a career in broadcast journalism with the past almost three decades spent here in the United States. We're both now at that, and I'm beginning to think quite complicated decade when careers end or at least wind down, retirement beckons, and we're both trying to figure out the best ways to optimise our health as we move forward with our lives. Peter, that pretty much sums it up?
It certainly does, doesn't it? That was very sobering, actually. It just sort of like left me going, oh, a bit speechless there, Peter.
I didn't mean to have that effect at the beginning of this conversation. But if it's sobering, so be it. Yeah. So the last time we spoke, it hasn't been for a few weeks, you were struggling to get back into your gym routine after a period of travelling. And you've just been away again, so I'm just curious where you are at the moment.
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me this, Peter. You know what? So I got back. I was in Malta on a diving course last week. And when I got back, I thought I'm going to be talking to Peter and he's going to ask me if I've gone to the gym. So as I woke up and I was having, so my wife and I have a long habit of having breakfast in bed together. So it started, and this started out when the kids were little, and it was just about the only time we could have some peace and quiet. So now we still continue this. One of us takes turns, makes breakfast. And it was like this thing, you're lying in bed, eating your breakfast. Do I go to the gym? And then I'm thinking, no, Peter's going to ask me if I've been to the gym. So I better be able to say yes. So I have been back to the gym. Haven't started on the strength stuff yet, but I've been getting the cardio back to where I think it should be. So I'm doing the same level of cardio that I was doing 2 months ago. So yeah, that's just about fine. Got to get back to the strength stuff now.
I'm glad I can play a role of virtual distant inspiration then in some way if I'm doing that, or maybe it's peer pressure, I don't know what it is. But I raised that subject in part because, yeah, I was curious, but also the first subject that we're going to talk about today, and just a reminder, in this podcast what we do is look at the latest science, the latest academic papers, or indeed other issues that have maybe cropped up in the news, and there's going to be a couple of today that are of interest and certainly attracted my attention as we think about these age-related issues, exercise-related issues as we get older. And actually, very recently, this is a study in Obesity Journal. It was published on the 4th of September, and it is about the best time window during the day to exercise, specifically looking at the relationship between exercise and weight loss. And this study isolated the hours of 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. as being most associated with having a lower waist circumference and body mass, at least lower than those people who worked out during the midday or evening time. And this is an epidemiological study of some 5,000 people from 2003 to 2006. This is the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. Data that is often used, isn't it, Peter, in terms of these kinds of studies. The data already exists, but it's being re-examined with this particular issue in mind.
I mean, first of all, when I looked at this, I sort of like cheered, right? Because I'm a sort of like, I'm an early morning exerciser. So I thought that's good. But I mean, because it's an epidemiological study, it's difficult to identify cause and effect, isn't it?
Exactly.
So, I mean, that's always the problem with these things. And it could be that there are people who are exercising in the afternoon who have other habits or are doing other things. Maybe they're not restricting their calories or whatever. So it's difficult to try and pin down. I mean, the authors themselves, so they cannot pin down the cause and effect of this. One of the things they suggest is that it may be that people who are exercising in the morning, because they're starting their exercise in the morning, they're in calorie deficit when they start, so they're burning weight, so they're burning calories off. That's one of the suggestions that might be the case. But otherwise, it's a sort of it's interesting, but the absence of a cause and effect is, or the mere hinting of what the cause and effect is here is, I hesitate to say the word, frustrating. It's sort of, but
yeah, I agree with you. And just to elaborate on that a little bit, essentially what happened was that they had their BMI, their waist circumference, measured before the activity tracking period, but not afterwards. So that falls into exactly what you're saying, that they, yes, they fell into this category, but there's certainly no cause and effect information there that we can glean from this. The only conclusion is that it seems as if those people that were successful in losing weight fell into that category. But the reasons, and perhaps it is the reasons that are of most interest to us, those reasons are not clear.
Yeah. I mean, are you a morning exerciser or are you an evening person?
Definitely morning. And I think this is why it's still interesting. I had exactly the same reaction as you. I thought, great, at least I'm in that category. I prefer, actually, this goes for everything that I do in life, whether it is work or exercise. I prefer to do everything in the morning. If I could choose the best time of day to go to work and do the kind of work that I do, I would say morning. And I've actually got a long history of doing that. When I was in the UK, I used to work mostly in the mornings, working on breakfast programs. I feel that's the time I'm at my best, both physically and mentally. But yes, now that I've got a little bit more freedom in terms of choosing the hours that I do things, exercise is the thing that I do first. I mean, one reason the dogs demand it, that I get out there and do some exercise. But I also go to the gym. Usually it's a regular 9 o'clock in the morning that I do the gym, and then tend to work later in the day. I feel better. I feel as if and I think there is something in just getting it done, just getting it out of the way for the day. Like you, it isn't necessarily top of my list of things that I want to do that day, but I know I've got to.
Yeah, I mean, sort of, it's interesting. I mean, were you always a morning person? You know, going back 50 years ago, were you a morning person then?
That's interesting, because I don't think I was. Certainly as a student, I wasn't a morning person. And I think you go back even further, as a teenager, when we first knew each other, getting up in the morning to go to school was tough. Didn't like it and would sleep in for a long, an embarrassingly long time on a weekend because I could. So I definitely wasn't a morning person then. But I think then you've got the complication of growing factors. The body is still growing. You need more sleep at that time of your life. But then as I progressed into certainly 20s and 30s, I definitely became a morning person. And what I'm not certain of is whether that was just foisted on me because of my work schedule at the time. And then it grew on me as a lifestyle, and it's something that I haven't kicked ever since. But there is, interestingly, and we're not going to delve into it today, but there is interesting science about this, that there is some have identified a genetic effect here, that some of us are predetermined, pre-wired, if you like, to be morning people or to be night owls, to want to stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning.
I mean, because I'm aware of some of this genetic work as well, and and the reason I asked that question is because I would mirror exactly what you've just said. Is I would have said that when I was in late teens, early 20s, when I was an undergraduate student, I was definitely a nighttime person. I would have been happily staying up till 1 or 2 o'clock listening to music, you know, and really wanting to lie in bed, getting into lectures, you know what it was like.
Skin of your teeth.
Yeah, by the skin of your teeth. And then just sort of like, you know, just trying to get your brain in gear. And yet nowadays, this morning I woke up at 5 o'clock. I laid in bed for about 5:30 and then went downstairs and made my wife a cup of tea because I knew she was going to wake up in a few minutes' time. And I just had a cup of tea ready for her when she woke up. So it was, now I'm just the exact opposite of that. And so I'm aware of this genetic stuff, but I'm thinking, well, I've just transitioned from one to the other. And I, like you, I mean, you had the radio work. I used to get up to commute into London, and I was just so used to being on that 7 o'clock train into London.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And it's interesting you say about the 5 o'clock in the morning waking up. That's about when I wake up now. And I now wake up, it's still dark outside, look at the clock, hoping, really hoping that it's 5, 5.30 or even on a really good day, 6 a.m., that I've slept for that long. And usually it isn't. It's quite oftentimes it's 4.30, yeah. It's 4.45. And I'm thinking, well, I really should sleep a little bit longer, but I can't. And I'm all of a sudden wide awake at that time of day.
Well, you know, we've talked about walking before. And the last time we chatted, we were talking about walking. And I walked to the gym. And I walked to the gym. I did my cardio and I've been walking back. So this morning I was walking to the gym and in my head, I'm just so, it's, you know, late summer. But actually, as I was walking to the gym, it was 8 degrees outside. So I was walking to the gym because it's so, yes, 8 degrees. So there I was in my shorts walking to the gym. Fortunately, I had a sweatshirt on, but I was cold. I could feel the cold all the way through, all the way to the, till I got to the gym. But, you know, in part, I just feel that sometimes feeling cold is good for you. And because it's just, I'm sure it's a stimulus to the circulation system, just being cold. And so I just feel that, you know, it's not going to kill me. I'm just going to feel a bit cold on the walk to the gym. And then I get to the gym and I'm sweating like everybody else. So it's no big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, on the walk back, it probably put 4 degrees on by the time I was walking back.
I'm the same. And of course, living here in California, I relish those days when I can get it. And we're actually just moving in. The weather this year has been weird in California. Mm. It's only still September. Normally, this is one of the hottest months of the year here. The hotter months come towards the end of the year. But chilly mornings. And as you know, we had some torrential rain, very unusual. The tropical storm that we had a few weeks ago, very unusual for here. But even earlier in the summer, we've had much more rain this year. And it's almost feeling like a British season. So I'm getting up in the morning at 5 or 6 a.m. and opening the door, let the dogs out, and having to close it quickly because it's so cold. Wow. It's weird, but I'm actually quite enjoying it.
Yeah, it's an El Nino year,
isn't it? It is, yes.
Yeah.
So that means potentially more rain this winter. We've lived through lots of El Ninos here in California, not particularly recently. I know when I first moved here in the mid-90s, I think 97 was a really, really wet year. Again, I quite like that. We probably don't need the rain now. The reservoirs are really full at the moment, but it's nice to get back to, you know, everything's beautifully green, which is unusual at this time of year. So it's good for the countryside.
Yeah.
Let's move on, Peter. The issue of loneliness is something that we've talked about in this podcast, not you and I, but with other guests over the last few months, being a really serious problem that is being more acknowledged these days, I think, than ever before. Mm. And in a report earlier this year, the US Surgeon General linked it to a number of conditions, cardiovascular disease, dementia, stroke, depression, anxiety, premature death, saying that the mortality rate was similar to that caused by smoking up to 15 cigarettes a day.
Gosh.
Now, that study's been out for a while. I then also spotted an article in the Los Angeles Times that linked this issue to societal changes and especially our use of technology. And they focused in the fact that we have self-checkouts now at supermarkets. And for those, honestly, something I had never really thought about, but for those people who are lonely, sometimes just getting out and going to a supermarket, doing their daily shopping and talking to someone there at the checkout is at least an opportunity to speak to someone. But this tendency to push everyone towards the self-checkouts is potentially making things worse.
There are just so many tragically sad ironies in this, aren't there, really? We live in a world where there is so much hyper-connection in the world that we live in with phone and email and social media, and yet but it's so easy for that to degrade the quality of human contact that we have. And it's so easy to get pulled into it. I mean, I can put my hand up and I can say, you know, I can think of times when I've been sitting with friends and family members and then you absentmindedly pick up your phone. Maybe you pick up your phone to do something sensible. And then, you know, I shouldn't use the word sensible, but you pick your phone up to do something which needs to be done. And then you flick through and then you just suddenly find yourself just being hooked in and wasting time. And it essentially degrades the quality of interpersonal connection that you have when you're present with other human beings, I think. I mean, and this is something that it talks about in that Surgeon General report. It talks about that degradation of the quality of human contact. And it made me just think about the comparison between that and, I mean, the other problems which are impacting upon us all, which are the temptation for obesity. Everywhere farming technology has been so developed that we're able to produce so much food. We've got starvation in part of the planet. We've got readily available food. We've become obese. We've got labour-saving devices. We don't exercise as much. We've got devices which allow us to have more social connection, but then that degrades the quality of social connection that we have. I mean, there are so many obvious and tragic ironies, and it's so easy to be pulled into all of them. I mean, do you find a temptation with that yourself, with social media and things?
Oh, totally. I think it's a huge, huge issue. I tend to think of this issue, the umbrella issue of loneliness, almost as a silent killer, and all the repercussions that you've just outlined, that it's there, it's around us, but we can't see it, really. It's something that it's difficult to pinpoint, and I think that's why it's been overlooked for so long. I think clearly technology, social media has a big role to play. I don't think it's entirely to blame. I think the way the society is changing is potentially to blame as well. But in terms of using the phone, as you say, whether it's looking down to try to do something, whether it's sensible or necessary or work-related, whatever, there are so many distractions in that little piece of technology that are clearly bad for us, that are a waste of time. And I can see I was going to ask you, have you ever been in a state during your life where you felt lonely, where you felt seriously lonely? And how did you cope with it? And I'm guessing maybe it was in a different age and therefore some of these issues didn't apply.
How did I cope with it? I think I needed to develop structure in my day, because I think if I experience loneliness, then loneliness can lead to, I mean, I wouldn't use the word despair, but it's almost an associated level of apathy. And to combat that, I need lists. I need a list. So I make lists of things that I need to do, lists of things I need to do in the day, the week, the month. And I don't do everything that's on the list, but I have the list. And it's one of the things I really like, going to the gym in the morning, because by the time I get back, I feel as I've achieved something in the day. Something's been achieved. I've started the day with an achievement. And then I can go on, and as I tick myself through the list, I've created more achievements. It might seem that might seem strange as a way of combating loneliness, but I think is what it does is it sort of gives me a sort of a sense of discipline that then I can go out and interact with people. Maybe I'm not phrasing that very well.
No, I get what you're saying. And actually, you triggered another thought, going back to the previous story that we're talking about. Just going to the gym, you're probably the same as me. I always leave feeling much better than when I arrived, just walking through the door.
Yeah.
Knowing, not really dreading it, actually quite looking forward to it, but you know you've got a routine to go through. You've got certain weights to lift. You know it's going to be tough at certain times. And it is, to some extent, something to be got through. But you walk out, exhilarated, you've done it, and in my case, kind of ready for the day. But there's more than that. There is the social interaction that you have by being at a gym, and especially if you're working out alongside other people, or working with a coach. And there's a conversation there, very often not talking about what you're doing, but talking about the world or something that's going on in their lives. And there's the social interaction intermingled with the physical benefits of being at the gym. And we'll continue this conversation in just a moment.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we're the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
Yeah, and I was just thinking about combating loneliness. And, I mean, you really can, today, of course, we can, it's so easy to pick the phone up and have a video call and talk to somebody. where you can actually see some sort of social media, and this accessibility that we get through electronic devices can help combat loneliness. Because while I was away in Malta, I was in a hotel room. It was very hot outside. I'd be doing my diving. I'd come back. I would be dehydrated because of the heat. I had to do this course in a dry suit, Peter. So I had a dry suit on. I was putting a dry suit on in 30 degrees. And of course, you may remember that I'm a sweaty northerner. So I just don't really, I cope with the cold really well. I don't cope with the heat so well.
Right.
And so I was just getting back exhausted. And I just go out for a meal. And I probably wasn't, apart from people on the course, I probably wasn't talking to any other human being more than 40, 50 words a day. But, you know, I could talk to my wife, right? So you can use electronic devices from that. And yet those electronic devices can also degrade things as well. They can be both useful and they can be a negative. Do you do anything to combat that yourself, if you think about the degrading effect that electronic devices can have and so, on?
Yeah, well, I suppose what I, and I guess what a lot of people are trying to do is simply just put it down and to use it for the beneficial reasons that it is designed for, and try to have the discipline, which is admittedly difficult, but the discipline not to be distracted by the waste of time aspects of,
yes,
of social media and of technology. There's a new iPhone upgrade. Actually, another, going back to the gym, I was talking to someone a few decades younger than me, asking me, seeing me with the iPhone, have you done the latest upgrade to the latest operating system, showing me on their phone, because they'd done it the very instant that they were able to do it, all excited about the new functions. And I'm looking at it, kind of dreading getting my head around the fact that it's all going to look different. I'm going to have to learn a lot of new stuff just to achieve the same kind of things. This person was very excited about it. Look, we can do this, we can do this, we can do this. And most of which I didn't need to do anyway. I think there's clearly a generational issue there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think maybe in terms of what to do about it, maybe those of us who are of a generation that knows what it was like not to have them at all, maybe ought to try to better find some balance in our lives that mirrors how it used to be. And I don't want to be like an old curmudgeon,
yeah,
defying the fact that we've got this technology. I think a lot of it is good. But I think perspective is what we need to try to achieve.
Yeah, which brings us on to the last thing we're going to discuss. But I was thinking that what I feel, so I've noticed so often, I'll be sitting down and I'll be maybe watching a movie and there'll be a ping. I'm expecting an email and it might be, I'll just quickly have a look at this and say yes, no, or whatever, or a text message. And then just find yourself flicking. Mm. So now what I do is my phone is switched onto silent mode and I leave it in a different room. I leave it in a different room and I don't pick it up. And I resent that wasting of time that just gets sucked into it. I really do. And I you saw me laugh when I was when you were talking about your dread at the new operating system. And I was thinking, you know, 40 years, well, when I've been using the particular type of computer I've been using it since the 1980s, that model of computer. Yeah. And I remember the operating systems used to come out and I would be that person that would hungrily download everything and install it and play with it. And now I'm just that, oh, really, do I have to? I suppose so. You know, so when you were talking about that, I was just laughing because that's just exactly me.
Yeah. And something else you just said that just triggered a thought in my mind, and this is directly related to my conversations with you when we're not doing this right now. We communicate using a certain social media chat platform, of which there are many. And I don't know whether you're like me, but I have friends, work colleagues especially, there are a number of different platforms we can use to instant message. And everyone uses, well, it seems like everyone uses something different. So I know in my mind that if I'm waiting for a communication from you or from,
yeah,
someone different, that you're not going to communicate with me on platform A, but this other person probably will. And so you're flicking between and making sure that you have notifications on your front page for all these different ways to communicate, which ultimately just fuels my frustration with the whole thing that, the olden days, I hate to use that expression, but the olden days, there was a phone and then there was email, but there were limited numbers of ways of which we could actually get in touch with each other. And we all kind of used to use the same thing because there weren't many.
I remember some in the early days when I was going to the United States to give talks or to do field work or whatever. And I remember going to the airport, and it was a time before smartphones, before I even had a mobile phone, if I think going back to the late 1980s, early 1990s. And I knew that once I jumped on the bus that took me to Heathrow Airport, at that point, nobody on planet Earth could contact me except, I suppose, the police could, but nobody was going to contact me. And I was just uncontactable for the next 18 or 20 hours until I got to a hotel. I used to love that feeling of being not contactable. My goodness, I used to love it. And of course, I've never had that ever since I got a mobile phone, really.
Yeah. And I still refuse to get the Wi-Fi on planes. I don't want to be in touch, and especially for domestic flights, it's not quite as easy on all international flights. But even on domestic flights, I just, as a matter of principle, don't pay for the Wi-Fi. I think I can go for a few hours without being, and as you say, quite enjoy that isolation.
Yeah, I mean, in diving, you know, there are people who are marketing devices that will allow you to communicate with people and talk to them underwater. And I'm just sitting there thinking, why? Why? I want silence.
Yeah, exactly. Let's move on then, because I think this final story, as you just indicated, is kind of relevant to this. And the headline is Moderation in Everything. We can just apply that to our mobile phones.
Yes.
Last month, the UK's oldest man celebrated his 111th birthday, John Tinniswood. He lives in a care home in Southport. And he took the opportunity of his birthday, when asked, to share some of his rules to live by with healthy aging in mind. And they include exercising the mind and moderation in all things, which really struck a chord with me. I probably mentioned it to you before, Peter, that I think through all the conversations that I've had with some of the world's experts on longevity science, whether it's diet, exercise, you name it, it all often seems to come down to moderation in everything: exercise, diet, work, play, drinking. And, you know, to describe it as a newfangled longevity hack, moderation might be pushing it a little bit. But I would actually quite like to pursue that and see if I could get people to... It's generally met with kind of a glazed look. That's not very exciting, moderation. But I really genuinely believe that there's a lot in it.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think there's been a number of science stories and really interesting stories about diet, hasn't there? And the role of various foodstuffs. There was a lovely BBC article some years back, which was illustrating statistics and looking at the detrimental impact of, I believe it was bacon and the relationship between bacon and colon cancer, which, you know, everyone knows about cured meats and things and what sort of negative health impact it was. And it was the BBC article was just about how you communicate the statistics, which was a really nice article. And really what it boiled down to it was, if you eat bacon in moderation, it's sort of fine, really. But if you eat bacon every day of your life, well, you probably wouldn't want to eat it every day of your life, right? Then you have an increased risk of various cancers. But if you eat it once every couple of weeks, it doesn't really make a lot of difference.
Yeah, just like you probably wouldn't want to eat tofu or red beans, supposedly healthy foods. You wouldn't want to eat those with every meal every day of your life.
Yeah. Except my wife, for example, she has bacon because she has a bit of arthritis. So if she has bacon, her knuckles, she gets arthritis in her hands and she gets pain almost within an hour and a half. So even though I do like bacon, I know if I cook it, my wife will say, no, I won't eat it. But as soon as I cook it, she'll want to have it. So by and large, I just don't cook it in the house, really, because otherwise it's just an unfair temptation on her.
Yeah, exactly. And clearly, notwithstanding the fact that there's a lot of very good, very beneficial research behind different food types that we can't ignore. And as you've just implied, one diet isn't right for everyone. So you can't just blandly say moderation in everything is going to suit everyone, because it probably isn't. And that there are certain food groups that there are certain things that I know I can't eat later in the day because I get a bad night's sleep. And that's mostly dairy foods. But I think as a general principle in our lives,
yeah,
moderation is probably quite a good word.
Yeah, I think that just, I naturally feel as though that seems to be like a really good idea. Yeah.
And with that in mind, I guess we've talked for 30 minutes, moderation in everything. Let's call it a day, Peter. It's been another really good conversation. Really enjoyed this one. We will talk soon.
Look forward to it, Peter.
Llama Podcast is a HealthSpan Media production. We'll be back with another conversation very soon. In the meantime, thanks so much for listening.
This podcast is for informational, educational and entertainment purposes only. We do not offer medical advice. If you have health concerns of any kind, or you are considering adopting a new diet or exercise regime, you should first consult your doctor.
FlexBeam is a portable red light therapy device that's now being used by leading athletes, including the Norwegian tennis player Casper Ruud.
Whenever you put the FlexBeam on, you feel it starts to work right away. I need something that can help repair all the fibers that I have broken in the serves.
The infrared light penetrates our skin and makes the muscle tissue recover faster. FlexBeam, I keep it with me all the time.
Recharge Health is offering Llama Podcast listeners an $80 discount on the purchase of a FlexBeam device. Go to the website recharge.health and use the code Llama at checkout. That's LLAMA. You'll also find the link in the show notes for this episode.